今日はここから永遠に無限の数学的見解ということで、ジョン・パーカー氏に、メッセージを伺うことにします。 So John, would you please start your speech? Thank you very much.
So, Hilda has asked me what, as I am a mathematician, and what can mathematics tell us about when we think about God? So I'm talking as a mathematician, but I'm also talking as a Christian, and I'm going to be talking about how ideas in mathematics can help us to think more about God. So this is my title, and this is the title, in fact, of a film, a very old film. And in fact, this is the picture from the film, and you can see, if you've got good eyesight, it's from 1953, so 60 years old. So, but the title is From Here, which is our world here, to Eternity. And eternity we can think of as heaven, we can think of as infinity, we can think of things beyond where we are. So my subtitle is A Mathematical View Infinity. So on your slides, we should have the numbers which are here. Those numbers should be the same as on your piece of paper. Thinking about infinity can be very confusing. So if something I say is confusing, well, maybe it's because I'm not explaining it well. Maybe because we have a bit of a language barrier. But maybe it's because it's confusing. So one of the most famous Christian hymns, which is called Amazing Grace, has these words in the English version. Now, I'm told that the Japanese version is slightly different. And so let me explain what these English words are saying. It says, when we've been there, when we've been in heaven for 10,000 years, very, very long time, we've no less days. The amount of time that we're going to still be in heaven is the same amount that when we started. It's talking about infinity, that I can still have 10,000 years, but I can still have the same amount of time in the future as I had when I started. So maybe we should just think a little bit about that, because that's a difficult thought to think about. So just read those words and maybe the translation you have there, and just think a little bit about what this means. So I think the English is quite complicated here. I believe Hulda has translated it, but it means that when after 10,000 years, there's still as much time in the future as when we started. So does this mean that eternity is one day after another, after another, after another, without stopping? That's what this hymn is trying to say. And I think this is one view of what eternity might be. And if that's the view, let's imagine, let's play a game with our minds of what that might be like. So the next slide, this is a bit difficult to do, we're just going to play Think and Imagine. So this is what I want you to imagine. There's a hotel, and it has infinitely many rooms. Of course, this thing cannot really exist, but it's just a thing in our minds. A hotel with infinitely many rooms, and let's just make it easy for ourselves. The rooms are called 1, 2, 3, 4, and they're just carrying on going with numbers forever. And that somehow is a nice picture of what it might be like to have this hotel corridor going on and on forever. Now let's just think in our little thought experiment that this hotel is full. Every room has somebody living in it. It's full, there are no empty rooms. Now, what happens? A new guest arrives. This lady's just arrived with all of her bags at the hotel. There are no empty rooms. What should the manager do? Well, he could say goodbye to her, but he wants to have her business. That's okay, because in an infinite hotel, things are a little bit different. So what he could say is every guest should move to the next door room with what number one higher. So the person in room one moves to room two, which is one plus one. Person in room two moves to room three, which is one plus two. Person in room three moves to four, and so on. Everybody moves to one more room extra. Still, everybody has a room. But now, room one is empty, so this new person can live in room one. So that's what it's like in an infinite hotel. The hotel is full, but there's still room for a new guest. That's a bit different from our normal way of thinking. So you have to think, it's a little bit confusing. Now what happens? Infinitely many guests arrive. Hotel manager, what should the hotel manager do now? It's okay, it doesn't matter that every room is full and we have infinitely many new guests. Let's see what we could do. Every guest should move to the room whose number is double the room number that they started with. So the one in room one moves to room two, which is two times one. The one in room two moves to room four, which is two times two. One in room three moves to room six, which is two times three, and so on. And now it's only the rooms with even numbers that have people living in them. All odd number rooms are free. And that means that all these infinitely many guests, they can live in the odd numbered rooms and still room in the hotel. So that leaves us a question. What does it mean for a hotel with infinitely many rooms to be full? If I went to an ordinary hotel and somebody said it was, the manager said it was full, well, that would mean every room had a guest in it and there was no room for anybody new. But with my infinite hotel, every room can have a guest in it, and there's still room for infinitely many new guests. This is very confusing, very hard to get your mind around. But that's a little bit of what infinity and eternity might be like. So let's just think again about this. So this is a little bit like the hotel in my Amazing Grace. Because if we imagine that we have days without end in eternity, I have the same number of days with 10,000 new days past as I had at the start. I could just count my days and I could add 10,000 to it and I'd still have the same number of days going on in the future. But is that the only way that we can find infinity? Is it just adding things over and over again? What happens if we divide things into smaller and smaller pieces? So this is where we're getting a bit of maths, and it may be a little bit difficult. So just be patient, and we'll think about this. So let's think about fractions, p over q. And they're just normal whole numbers and there's no common factor, just like you would normally expect for a fraction. So maybe we've got a half and a third and two thirds. Now I want to put all of those numbers in order And I can make, put them in order so that I can see that the same number of fractions as there are whole numbers. Because I can count them. 1, 2, 3, I can go on. So how do I put them in order? Well, I have P over Q. I put them in, so the Q, it goes larger. So because I've decided that it's everything between 0 and 1, a half is my first one. So 2 is the smallest Q that I can find. And the next one is 3, so I have 1 over 3 and 2 over 3. Now I've got 1 over 4. Well, I should have 2 over 4, but I already had 2 over 4 because it was 1 over 2. 3 over 4, and that's used up all the ones with 4 on the bottom. Now I have 5, 1 over 5, 2 over 5, 3 over 5, 4 over 5. 1 over 6. Well, 2 over 6 is the same as 1 over 3. 3 over 6 is the same as 1 over 2. 4 over 6 is the same as 2 over 3. And I have 5 over 6, and I keep going. And I could put them in my hotel rooms. I could put this in room 1, this in room 2, this in room 3, this in room 4, all of the way through, and I would have often all my hotel rooms with a number. The same number as there would be of whole numbers. And mathematicians have a special word for that. We say that these are countable. There's infinitely many, but they're called countable. Because I can count them. 1, 2, 3. But there are even bigger collections of things which are uncountable. And I want to try to explain to you about uncountable things. And this is getting very hard. This is deep level stuff. So let's think again about fractions and think about decimal expansions. So we know that a half is 0.5. Third is 0.33333 forever. A quarter is 0.25. A fifth is 0.2. Sixth is 0.16666 all the way. Now, if I have a fraction and I want to write out its decimal expansion, one of two things happens. Either it stops, like a half is 0.5 and then I have nothing left, or a quarter is 0.25 and nothing left, fifth is 0.2 and nothing left, or I have a few numbers at the start and then there's this whole set of numbers that goes on and on forever. So a third, that's easy, we just have one number, 3, and it goes 3, 3, 3, 3, 3 all the way through. A 6, we start out with a 1, and then we have a whole line of sixes. Now a 7, this is a funny number, right? And some people say this is a perfect number because it has interesting properties. But so it has 0.142857. And then it goes again, 142857, 142857, 142857, 142857, 142857, forever. Okay? So it doesn't have to be just one number that repeats. Here we've got 6 numbers that keep repeating. But if I have a fraction, either it stops or I get some numbers that repeat. But I can think of plenty more ways I could have a decimal expansion that doesn't stop and doesn't repeat. So there are lots of numbers there. You have decimal sort of things. So like you all have heard of pi. That has a lot of decimal expansions. It never repeats. And it's one of these things that people play games and they try to remember all of the different digits in pi. But there are many, many more of these. I cannot put them in order, because there's nowhere to start. In fact, I can show mathematically that there are more things like this than there are things that were countable. And we call these uncountable. So even if eternity is one day after another, that's just a countable number. There's an even bigger number than that. That's uncountable. So uncountable sets should be really, 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 really big. Well, I'm going to show you an uncountable set that is really, 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 really small. Because this is what happens when we think about infinity. Things get confusing. So let's do another thought experiment. So I'm going to start with a piece of string or a line of length 1. Maybe it's 1 meter, maybe it's 1 centimeter, doesn't matter. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to keep chopping pieces out and throwing them away. So the first step, I remove all the pieces that are in the middle 1/3, between 1/3 and 2/3. That leaves me with 2 pieces that are half as long again. So let's, the next slide we've got a picture. I'm going to go backwards and forward between those slides. Start out with my fingers length 1, and I get rid of all the points in the middle there, in the middle 1/3. And now, in all of the pieces that are left, I remove the middle 1/3 of each of those lines. So let's look at the next picture. So here I had a piece that was 1/3 long. I removed 1/3, so that's a 9th length, and that's a 9th in length. And over here I've done the same, it's another 9th, so I have 4 lots of 1/9 in length. I do it again, so now I've got 8 lots of 1/27, and I've got 16 lots of 1/81, and they get smaller, and smaller. There's many, many pieces, but each of them is very short. So that's what I said on the previous one. And we keep repeating this infinitely often. The thing that's left is called a Cantor set. So how big is a Cantor set? Well, I'm going to say that it's infinitely, it's an uncountable number of points, but it's got length, it's got no length at all. It's a bit confusing. Infinity sets your mind spinning. We're just going to see if we can work out step by step, slowly. Okay. So what are some of the points that live in my Cantor set? So let's come here. I've got the end points of each of the intervals, each of these little lines. So maybe I could think about the point 1/3, because And I get to that point, from the first one, I choose the left piece, and then I keep choosing the right piece. So I could think of left, right, 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 forever. Or one of the ones down here, I could go maybe left, right, 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 or all the way down. That's what I've said here. I first select left, and then right always. So what happens for each of the ends of these black lines is I do some lefts and some rights, and we can choose between those. We toss a coin, and then after some point, I always go left, or right. And that's just like in my decimal expansion with a fraction, always I have something that repeats infinitely many times. So all of the points in my Cantor set, I can find that point by going left, right, how, in some sort of choice of lefts and rights. It's just like decimal expansions. Instead of having 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 as possibilities, I just have left and right. And there are uncountably many choices that I can make. So this means that a Cantor set is uncountably infinite. We can talk about that afterwards if you want to have more details. So how long is my Cantor set? Is that, I like this picture because it kind of gives you the feeling it's getting very short. Well, we started with a line of length 1. Then we removed something of length 1/3. Then we removed 2 pieces of length 1/9. 4 pieces of length 1/27. And in mathematical notation, we would say we move 2 to the n minus 1 pieces, each of length 1 over 3 to the 9. So each of these pieces is getting very, very, very small, but we're getting very, very large number of pieces. And it's sort of like a race. Right? More pieces getting smaller. Who's going to win? Well, actually, if we add up all of these numbers, so I had 1 was my first length, I take away 1/3, which was the first step, I take away 2 lots of 1/9, if I add all these pieces up together, all the things in this big long bracket just give me 1. So the total length of my Cantor set is nothing. It's uncountably big, but it's got no length at all. This feels like a paradox, a little bit like our hotel room. We're all full, but room for more guests. It's not how we're used to thinking of big things as being long, small things as being short. This is as big as you can get, and it takes up no space. Cantor set is uncountable, but it has no length at all. What could studying infinity then tell us about eternity? What can it tell us about God? And what we've just seen is if we as finite human beings start to think about things that are infinite, then we have things that look very strange to us. They seem like they must be wrong. So was the hotel full, or was the room for more guests? If the Cantor set is uncountably infinite, it takes up no room at all. We start to do this, we seem to think of things that seem to make no sense to us, because we're trying to apply our own human reasoning to something that's bigger than we can experience. If we start to do the same by trying to apply reasoning to God, then we find things that seem to make no sense to us. So let's see an example of that. If we start to use finite reasoning to study an infinite God, we start to find things that don't really make sense. So here's a piece of the Bible. This is Ecclesiastes chapter 3 and verse 11. God has put eternity, the infinite, into our hearts, but yet he's done it in a way so that we cannot find out what God has done from beginning to end. So notice, we go from beginning to end. This is the way time moves, and this is the way all of us experience things, but yet eternity, the writer here is saying, is bigger than that. God's put eternity in our hearts, but we just think from beginning to end, and we cannot understand what God is doing throughout all of time. We do not know the future. If you contrast this with another bit of the Bible from Isaiah chapter 46, God says, I am God, and there's no one like me, declaring the end from the beginning. From ancient times, things not yet done. We go from beginning to end. God sees beginning, the end from the beginning. He sees beginning and end at the same time. We go beginning to end. He sees everything, beginning and end, all at the same time. But even so, he's put eternity, the idea of the infinite, inside us, but yet we still can't quite understand it. So that gives us a paradox which theologians have thought about for centuries. If God knows all of the future, can we have real choice? It seems to us to be like a paradox because we live inside time and we cannot think outside time. God lives outside time. He sees all of time in a single glance. So does that mean we do not have real choice? Well, I think it does mean we have real choice. This is like the hotel being full and having room for guests. It's an idea that's beyond our normal experience here. We have choice, but yet God knows everything. This is what God says about himself. He says that as the heavens are higher than the earth, so his ways are higher than our ways, his thoughts are higher than our thoughts. And that if we just live in our ways and our thoughts, God is bigger and beyond all of those. Now, theologically, that is called transcendence, which is actually an interesting word because mathematicians will use certain sorts of these decimal expansions. We will call them transcendental. It's the same word, but in different contexts. But transcendence means that God is bigger and beyond all of the things of this world. And so that means we cannot discover God simply using our own human reasoning, because there's more to him. He's bigger and beyond that, and our own human reasoning will not get us that far. The Bible tells us we can know God. But the reason we know him is not because we can think about it from inside. It's because he chooses to reveal himself to us. So this is a bit of a long passage, but let me read it to you. At that time Jesus declared, "Thank you, Father, Lord of heaven and earth. You have hidden these things," this is the things of God, "He's hidden them from the wise people." So the wise people are the ones who think. God's hidden from people who are wise. But yet, he's revealed himself to little children. Small children can understand about God in a way that people who think sometimes cannot understand about God. Because that was God's gracious will. All things have been handed to Jesus by his Father. No one knows the Father except Jesus, the Son. And no one knows both ways round, and the people who the Son and anyone who the Son chooses, this is people who Jesus chooses to reveal God to, means that we can know Him. It's not that we've understood things because we're wise, it's because Jesus has revealed the Father to us. That's the only reason why we can know God, because He's not knowable with our mind, He's knowable through revelation only. We can only know God through revelation. But fortunately for us, He has chosen to reveal Himself to us. I've given three examples there of how God chooses to reveal Himself. First of all, for each of us, before we were Christians or before we really knew Him, it feels like, at the time, maybe, we are searching and asking questions. But in fact, we can only find the answers to those questions because God is revealing Himself to us. The Bible speaks of Him drawing us towards Him. So that's the time before we were Christians, as we're exploring Him. It's only through revelation that we can know God. The second example is when we pray. Prayer is a conversation. God speaks back to us as much as what we speak to Him. Now, it's not necessarily, although it can be, an audible voice that we hear. But normally there are three ways that God will speak to each of us. And He'll speak to each of us in different times and seasons in different ways, and maybe different people He will tend to speak to in a different way. One way is through things that we hear. Like maybe it feels like a little phrase comes into our head that was not there before. It might be God says, "I love you." And suddenly we realize it's more than just a thought we've had, but it's like a little, almost like a whisper in our ear from God. For other people, they see pictures, they see images, they maybe see revelation of God Himself as we pray. So sometimes it could be that you're praying, and then at that moment, it's like an image comes into your mind, which is the answer to your prayer. That's God speaking to us in that particular way. And the third way is sort of something that's much more difficult to describe, but it's just something that happens in us, in our sensations, in deep down inside us. We suddenly get maybe an inner peace, or He speaks to us through our emotions, there's a depth of something we know, that there's something there from God. So that's when we pray, that's how God speaks back to us. I'm going to give you an example in a moment. And the third way that God speaks to us is sometimes He will get other people to speak to us. And this is one of the gifts of the Holy Spirit, and we call this prophecy. And it might be that as I'm praying, or as I'm something, God will speak something to me, and I will know that I have a word for somebody else. And this is an example of prophecy. And these are three examples of the way God speaks to us. Another example that I haven't put on the slide is sometimes He speaks to us through the Bible. But when we're reading a passage, suddenly a phrase, a word, a sentence suddenly leaps off the page, as if we've never seen it before. We may have read it hundreds of times, but suddenly something fresh comes as we're reading the Bible. These are all ways that God speaks to us. So I want to give you an example. So Chris, my wife, wave to us. This is Chris, my wife. So we are living in Japan for 1 year. We've been here 3 months. We've got another 9 months to go, slightly less. Now, there are many practical difficulties with living in another country. One of the practical difficulties we had is we have a house. What are we going to do with the house? So, because I like to pray, I was praying, God, show me what we should do with the house. Because Chris is much more practical, she would have thought of things, but no, I like to pray, and I said, God, what should we do with the house? And as I was praying, a little phrase came into my head. And that little phrase is, it's all right. Janet's going to need it. Going to need the house. Now, I need to explain to you a little more at this point. Otherwise, this doesn't make sense to you. So here is Janet. She's a lady who, for 9 months of the year, works in India as a missionary. And when she's back in England, she lives with Chris and I in our house. So there's our house, and there's Janet. This is our problem. So Janet usually works in India. When she's in England, she lives with Chris and me. In our house. That's our house. Very ordinary English house. The next day, they look different from Japanese houses. It's just what English houses look like. But well, when we come back to here, when I was praying, this little phrase came into my head. Now, the next day, I was talking to a Christian friend who was asking us about our plans for coming to Japan. And as he was asking, he said, oh, what are you going to do with your house? And he paused, and he said, it's all right. Janet's going to need the house. Isn't she? And for me, it was amazing because he used exactly the same words that I had heard the day before. And I realized that this was not just a little phrase that came into my head. It was not just a piece of wishful thinking. Because I had confirmation from somebody else, maybe this was God speaking to me. This is how God speaks to us. This is how we get revelation from Him. I was praying, it was a conversation. He spoke to me about the house. I was going to be uncertain, so He sent somebody to confirm it. And it could be a coincidence, but usually I find that coincidences are usually the hand of God and not really something random. And now Janet currently living in our house, and she's looking after it, and it gives her somewhere to live. So she decided not to go to India this year, but instead to live in our house for the whole time. It's an example of how God speaks to us today. So, from here to eternity, let's go back to my original question. Is eternity one day after another, when we've been there 10,000 years, bright, shining as the sun, we've no less days to sing God's praise than when we first begun? Now it seems to me that if we use human reasoning, we actually cannot know the answer that question. It's not something that the Bible tells us about explicitly. It's something that we can imagine maybe it is one day after another. And it could be. It could be that John Newton is right when he wrote that hymn. But it might be that eternity means that we're outside of time that there isn't any time in heaven, and that we're transported to a place where God is, who is outside time, seeing the end from the beginning. But whatever it is, and we won't know until it happens, and it's probably something completely different, from where we are, from here, to eternity is something we cannot reason. But one day, we're going to experience this. This is what Paul says in Corinthians. He says, I tell you a mystery. We shall not sleep, but we shall all be changed. In a moment, in the twinkling of an eye, at the last trumpet. For the trumpet will sound, and the dead will be raised, imperishable, and we'll be changed. We won't be like we are now, bound by a human, finite brain, sitting inside of time and space. But we shall be raised imperishable. For this perishable body must put on the imperishable. This mortal body must put on immortality. We're going to be changed from something here, now, and finite into something that can understand the infinite, can understand the eternal, something that's going to be with God. So we're going to break here for a little while, and we're going to come back with lots of questions.